Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I hope this falls into the category of better late than never. But I don't think it does. Because the audio just degraded to, oh, for heaven's sakes. Oh, well, if the voice is still coming through okay, that at least is a benefit. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. I was away from the microphone last night because of late evening meetings, so I apologize for the absence, but it wasn't just a matter of playing hooky, so I hope you'll forgive the absence. Hopefully we'll have a regular broadcast schedule through the remainder of this week, and then I get head for home on the weekend. So we will cross our fingers, right? Yeah. Again, of course, and I apologize for being a little addled. These last minute tech things just really, really screw with your head, especially when, you know, it's kind of a one man band situation. Thanks, Jeremy. Loud and clear here. Yeah. Appreciate that. Let's see. Gentle reminder, all of this happens by virtue of your decision to keep all of this going, and we are in a hole that's about $500 deep right now. It'll be $650 deep tomorrow, and on Friday it'll be $800 deep, so there's that. Oh, hey, Jason. Glad to know you're out listening in Mississippi, Stan, no less. Much appreciated. Isaac telling me to speak up. Well, there's a problem. My voice hasn't changed since we started the program. Neither have the settings. However, this mix desk apparently changes things at will. I don't know. There's some little creature in there that's not a very good producer. So we'll just have to get along now, won't we? That's just how it is with this. But anyway, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and I'll try to get, we will do everything. I'll do everything in my power to get a show done this evening. So where do you want to go this evening? I know, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. But there's just a ton of stuff out there that goes all over. Well, it touches more than prayer meeting Wednesday. Although there's some stuff that has a prayer meeting Wednesday flavor to it. See, let me explain why we can't play the prayer meeting Wednesday music. Check this out.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say.
Yeah, you hear that? That's this. Well, that's the reality. So, there you go. Nope, not going to talk about that. I'll get hate mail. Let's see. So, what? Well, like I said, there are stories out there that have an aspect of prayer meeting Wednesday to them. And and others that, well, have nothing to do with Wednesday. So we'll get after all of it. It was, naturally, it seems like whenever I'm not able to be on the air, things just present themselves to, I mean, they roll at your feet. The prayer meeting, Jason, the prayer meeting Wednesday, offertory hymn is actually a bit that comes from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's, Chaser comedy show. And it's a send-up of a mega church there in Australia. But it works generally for all of these mega churches that have humongous jumbotrons and better sound systems and bands than, you know, The Who or... Right. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, and it would be improper not to at least work a story in for prayer meeting Wednesday, right? So how about a story out of Alabama? Oh, please let this audio work, please. No, of course it's not going to work. The Alabama Public Service Commission, and a public service commission in one place is very much the same as a public service commission in another one. Insofar as public service commissions exist, well, they are the creature of they're a progressive idea that came along with the rise of utilities. There was a certain understanding that things like water and sewer and even garbage pickup and certainly electricity should be monitored on behalf of the people. So that these outfits, you know, for instance, a power company, there's no real retail shopping for electricity. So they have a monopoly, a government-granted monopoly, and in order to keep a monopoly from behaving like a monopoly often will, to wit, in such a fashion as to gouge the living bejesus out of its rate-paying customers, well, governments created public service commissions. And so when a utility wants to raise its rates, they have to go through the public service commission. And, of course, in the modern era, the public service commission is often staffed, and the commissioners themselves are former hacks and flacks for the industries that they're supposed to be regulating. So it turns into sort of a pro forma show, but it's apparently an even bigger show in Alabama. This is not a joke. I would dearly love to be able to play this audio for you. How I yearn to be able to play this audio for you. Maybe we'll come back to it later in the evening. Maybe at the top of the hour break, I will restart all of this stuff once again. But it was a fairly straightforward meeting of the Alabama Public Service Commission. Happened last week. The question. The question was over Alabama Power, a frequent user of mountaintop removal coal, by the way, just in case you were wondering. Alabama Power wanted to raise the rates on people who use electricity in the state of Alabama. Enter John Delwyn Jordan, who attended, and he's from a place called Prattville, not Prattville, you got to say it right, Prattville. He was from a place called Prattville, and he was there on behalf of the Prattville Tea Party. I think it was Marty who earlier sent to me a beautiful little piece of thought that T in Tea Party is actually a set of initials that stands for Taliban Equivalent Americans. So the Prattville Tea Party representative, Prattville Tea Party, showed up to testify. And there was by the way, John Delwyn Jordan is a reverend. He is a preacher for the Prattville Baptist, some Prattville Baptist church. And the Public Service Commission is underway. The president of the Alabama Public Service Commission, by the way, is, and I'm not kidding, Twinkle Andrus Kavanaugh. Yes, Twinkle. Some 40 or 45 or maybe 50 years ago, a pair of loving, excited parents in Alabama gave, because, well, who knows how babies get named. But this loving set of parents with a new baby to name said, let's call it Twinkle. Really. She was Twinkle Andrus then. She has since become Twinkle Andrus Kavanaugh. She is a notorious, Republican Tea Party type. And she was ostensibly leading this Public Service Commission meeting in the course of examining the rate structure for Alabama Power, the PSC being empowered to do things like that. And lo and behold, there's John Jordan, Reverend John Jordan of the Prattville Tea Party, and Twinkle says, John Jordan is my friend, and so that's why I've told him he can lead our invocation. Now, I think we can have an open conversation as to why one needs an invocation for the Public Service Commission, but, well, yeah, you get the idea. So they're gonna invoke the Almighty to help them in their search for the proper electric power rates that should be applied to Alabama Power, which is, I believe, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Southern Company. I got that right? Now, Twinkle and Alabama Power, well, they just wanted to raise the rates on people who have to go out and scrape and scrabble and scramble for a living to be able to have electricity. So naturally, as John Archibald points out at AL.com in the Birmingham newspaper, he writes on July the 17th, I said it over and over on the way to Montgomery. Don't get distracted by the sideshow. Don't get distracted by the sideshow. It's what they want. It's what they count on. Every time you start to wonder what Wizard of Oz character Public Service Commission President Twinkle Andrus Kavanaugh might be, she's a horse of a different color, he writes, you play into the hands of those who would confuse the issue. It's all a classic shell game strategy, and every two-bit Sharpie knows it. As soon as the mark allows something shiny to catch his eye, he'll inevitably take his eyes off the P, and then he's a loser. Don't get distracted by the sideshow. So here I am, Mr. Archibald writes, at the third informal hearing for the PSC to review Alabama Power's rate structure, and I'm focused, and I'm ready, and before the meeting even comes to order, ooh, shiny, I'm gone. He says, and I'm not alone. These are his words, not mine, and I think they speak admirably well, very well, better than anything I could say. He says, because Kavanaugh, at a state meeting of a quasi-judicial regulatory body, is handing Prattville Baptist preacher John Jordan a commendation, even though he's on the agenda to speak as an interested party on behalf of the Tea Party. She's explaining that he gets to give the invocation because he is her friend. Believe me, we have not gotten into the meat of this story yet. There would, look, it'll take a couple of more paragraphs. You've got a little bit of time. Turn the speakers up so that you can hear what we're talking about in the other room. Run, get the tennis ball, get the duct tape, get in the chair, tennis ball in mouth, duct tape around heads, duct tape on the hands, just to make sure you're nice and safe when the fun part really starts. Ready? Go. And then Jordan polls the audience on who believes in prayer. At a state regulatory meeting, and then he prays that the world's gone crazy, that good is bad and bad is good. This whole thing begins, you understand, with him turning to the people in attendance at this Public Service Committee commission meeting in Montgomery, Alabama, and saying, who here believes in the power of prayer? Oh, God, how I wish I could play you this audio. This is driving me nuts. Who here believes in the miracle working wondrous power of prayer? And nobody in that room, because I wasn't there, is going to not raise their hand. Everybody believes in the wondrous miracle working power of prayer. There's power, power, wonder working power in the blood of the Lamb, of the Lamb. There's power, power. See, that's how it works. I mean, there's a reason I know these songs. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. I will never be fully recovered. I'll never be completely okay. I'm recovering. Sadly, we don't have meetings for the likes of me to go to. It might be kind of nice if we did. Little Unitarian congregation. You know, they can help heal you. Because there's no laying on of hands or anything. It's just, listen, we're going to have a rational conversation. Good, isn't this lovely? Yes. Don't pray in our schools and we won't think in your churches. Thank you. So we haven't gotten to the fun part yet. Because after asking whether they believe in the miracle, wondrous working power of prayer, well, the Reverend Doctor, Preacher, Pastor, Shepherd, Priest, Noble Lumpkin, John Delwyn Jordan. Well, he does a lot of invoking and invocating. Of course, that's what you do at an invocation. You call down the power of the Almighty, hallelujah, glory. And after he's done doing all of his Tea Party praying, remember, Taliban equivalent Americans. Wishful thinking, Jason. Jason tweeting at me, well, at least after they pray, they shouldn't raise their bills more than 10%, right? I wouldn't count on that. But if you've ever been around one of these things, you know it can get to the point where the person doing the invocating, it sounds like he or she, usually he, is carrying on a conversation with the Almighty with whom he enjoys a first-name basis relationship. God? Yeah, it's me. John Delwyn Jordan. Yeah. Taxed enough already. Yeah, hey, God. Well, you get to the end of the prayer. Oh, I wish you could hear this. Oh, my God. It had me running around the room tearing at my clothing before the program began. Then again, maybe it's... Okay, but you're all strapped in. So there, toward the end of the meeting, of the invocation, before they get down to the nitty-gritty business of raising their coal-fired power bills, John, Reverend Dr. Gospel Sharp John Delwyn Jordan says, we've taken you out of our schools. We've taken you out of our prayers. We've murdered your children. And see, he's not talking about actual murders. God knows this was not a lament over the over the murder of Trayvon Martin. He's talking about women exercising control over the workings of their own bodies. We've murdered your children. We've said it's okay to have same-sex marriage. God, we have sinned. Yeah, you heard that right. A public service commission meeting of the state of Alabama, which to this day remains at least titularly related to or a member of the United States of America, which reminds me of something. I had a lovely little note from our buddy Cindy in the Great Northwest. She sent me some various and sundry quotes from presidents of the United States. Regarding religion in America, and it starts, it's a great little list, it starts with George Washington. If I could conceive that the general, let me see if I can get my George Washington voice going. If I could conceive that the general government might ever be so administered as to render the liberty of conscience insecure, I beg you will be persuaded that no one would be more zealous than myself to establish effectual barriers against the horrors of spiritual tyranny and every species of religious persecution. That's May of 1789. Then October 20th, 1792, President Washington takes up his pen again and he writes to Edward Newenham, or Newenham, depending on your accent, of all the animosities which have existed among mankind, those which are caused by a difference of sentiments in religion appear to be the most inveterate and distressing, and ought to be deprecated. I was in hopes that the enlightened and liberal policy which has marked the present age would at least have reconciled Christians of every denomination so far that we should never again see the religious disputes carried to such a pitch as to endanger the peace of society. Starts with Washington, it goes down through Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Madison's in here, William Henry Harrison, his inaugural address of 1841. And remember, he didn't get much to do much more than his inaugural address, because he was dead fairly shortly thereafter. Got sick. Walked his inaugural parade in what was then the rather noxious, freezing cold capital of Washington City. And he said, "We admit of no government by divine right, believing that so far, as power is concerned, the beneficent Creator has made no distinction amongst men, that all are upon an equality, and that the only legitimate right to govern is an express grant of power from the governed." Wait, you mean God doesn't take a hand in... That's exactly what he means. And then God stracked him dead, smited him on the spot, killed him right on top of his little old bald head, sent him to bed. No, it really wasn't. It was probably the fact that medicine in 1841 was very akin to medicine in 1841 BCE. Maybe worse. But it goes on like that, all the way up to and including, wait a minute, because this is going to knock you silly. As you know, the separation of church and state is not subject to discussion or alteration. Under our Constitution, no church or religion can be supported by the U.S. government. We maintain freedom of religion so that an American can either worship in the church of his choice or choose to go to no church at all. Really, Richard Nixon, in a letter he wrote in 1960. What else?
I believe that prayer in public schools should be voluntary. It is difficult for me to see how religious exercises can be a requirement in public schools, given our constitutional requirement of separation of church and state. I feel that the highly desirable goal of religious education must be principally the responsibility of church and home. I do not believe that public education should show any hostility toward religion, and neither should it inhibit voluntary participation if it does not interfere with the educational process. Sit, Liberty, sit!
Gerald Ford, in an interview in 1976. We establish no religion in this country. We command no worship. We mandate no belief, nor will we ever. Church and state are and must remain separate, Mommy. Yeah, really, Ronald Reagan. Up through Bill Clinton, all the way to Barack Obama. Why all of that? Well, because of the Alabama Public Service Commission, which apparently, I mean, what do you do? Honest to God, what do you do if you're in the Alabama, you've gone to speak out against a rate increase? What do you do if you're a non-believer? This really is at the core of what if you're a non-believer in John Dolwyn Jordan's particular brand of ice cube temperature IQ evangelical fanatic fundamentalism? Remember, Taliban equivalent American. What do you do if you're not into that? But you're there and you want to protect yours and your friends and your neighbors and your colleagues' electricity rates from being just gouged through the roof. Well, no, we Alabama Power. We want all your money. Do you want? I mean, because it's the same thing for a school child. Well, you know, the little Jew and Muslim children can just walk out while we're praying to our Savior, and then they can come back and they can do their course lessons just with everybody else, except for the fact that we'll know that they're going to burn in hell because they don't have a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. So, at the Alabama Public Service Commission, if you don't want your rates raised, does that mean that you have to stick your hand in the air and, amen, oh, sweet Jesus, that you have to agree with John Dolwyn Jordan? Dolwyn, really. John Dolwyn Jordan, when he's a-praying and lamenting about, we've taken you out of our schools, Jeebus. We've taken you out of our prayers. We've murdered your children, except we're not talking about Trayvon, because that don't count. We've said it's okay to have same-sex marriage. God, we have sinned. Do you have to sign on with all of that to protect your electricity rates? Because if you do, then Tea Party really does stand for Taliban equivalent Americans, doesn't it? Back to John Archibald at in the Birmingham paper. He says, then Jordan polls the audience on who believes in prayer at a state regulatory meeting. And then he prays that the world's gone crazy, that good is bad, bad is good, that we've said it's okay to have same-sex marriage. We have sinned. You know, I can't see that sentence without immediately thinking of Jimmy Swaggart. I have sinned against you. Was there some money in the old good? And people looking around, Archibald writes, wondering if we might have taken this thing too far. And all I can think as I pray for an amen is that the greatest show on earth is not under the big top at all. It is here, in Montgomery, in an ugly David Bronner building. And they did it again. And here's the fun part. Because Jordan does not matter. That's John Dolwyn Jordan. apparently he doesn't have a brother named Jim Smartwin Jordan. His message is not the issue. Same for Kavanaugh's commendations and all her pseudo-shocking statements about environmentalists who never took a lick at a snake. Honey, probably ought not say honey. That might be sexist. Twinkle, I'll leave a snake licking to you. Or about how formally looking at Alabama power rates will cost Alabama jobs and how that's Barack Obama's fault. At this point in time, I mean, you would be expecting the speakers in the intercom system in the ceiling of the PSC hearing room to say, don't eat the brown acid. I repeat, don't eat the brown acid. But Mr. Archibald reaches the crux of the matter, and I think he's correct. He says, she gets, and Alabama Power gets, she being Twinkle, the snake licker, because us environmentalists ain't snake lickers. No, we're tree huggers, not snake lickers. Let's keep this all straight. No, snake handling and snake licking and strychnine swigging and floor rolling and mouth foaming and tongue speaking, and that's not our province. She gets, and Alabama Power gets, exactly what they want. They want the issue lost in passionate belief. An ideological tussle designed to pit tree huggers against coal miners, conservationists against those concerned with jobs, liberals against conservatives. See how it works? Yeah. Just keeping in touch with the boss back at the home studio. Kavanaugh knows, and Alabama Power knows, that most Alabamians will raise their hand for prayer every time. Most, when asked, will choose jobs over trees, and most, if they don't know what to think, will find their answers to the right. It is a strategy, nothing more, a good, time-honored strategy, which is the best reason to remember what these hearings are about. They're about Alabama Power's rate structure. And, yes, Jason did point out to me that Alabama Power, Georgia Power, Mississippi Power, etc., 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 are all owned by the Southern Company. Thank you. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate the verification. They're all about Alabama Power's rate structure, period. It's a structure, though debated to near incomprehension at these hearings, that is high for residential customers and low for industry. It allows the company to write off an $8 million salary for CEO Charles McCrary as operations and maintenance at a government-regulated monopoly. Oh, what a nice... Oh, that's pro-level racketry, isn't it? The company takes a return on equity 30 to 40% higher than the national average. And it takes hundreds of millions in higher profits that could be saved by ratepayers and pumped back into the economy. It would seem that Jesus was somewhat ineffectual in addressing any slash all of that. Yeah. But that's the direction that that's the direction that this country's taking, whether it's Alabama or Montana, whether it's Mississippi or Maine. God knows whether it's Detroit, Michigan, or hey, look, another community in bankruptcy, Jefferson County, Alabama. Welcome back, my friend, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. Here behind a glass is a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Jason noting, yep, I hear people say it was Obama who raised Mississippi power rates 13% a few months. Didn't Mississippi Power raise Mississippi power rates? Well, actually, the Mississippi Public Service Commission, if they still have one, if it hasn't just turned into old Confederate reenactors hooting in the weeds by this point, they're the ones who raised the rates, not Barack Obama. But there's a war on coal, don't you know it? There's a war on coal, and that Obama has created a no-job zone. Save me, Jeebus. And yeah, it's out there. If you just look at it, the war on coal has never gone away. Good gracious. Just looking at a picture right now from a sign in the front yard of some home in West Virginia. Stop the war on coal. Fire Obama. Over at the White House website, there, you know, the petition site for White House petitions. Listen to this. And by the way, there are 5,986 signatures on this petition. It was created July the 12th. American coal creates 766,000 jobs. That's J-A-W-B-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z. Yeah, just put a line over the top of all those Z's like a repeating decimal. American coal creates 766,000 jobs, more than $52 billion in wages to support American families, 50% of the nation's electric generation, and is a basic requirement for the production of steel. Yet President Obama has openly denounced coal, calling its use in the past a mistake. An insult to the generations of coal miners who made Merca the greatest nation in the world. He have used executive orders to bypass Congress, imposing impossible standards that will raise the price of energy for all Mercans. We call upon the president to apologize to American coal miners, past and present, and to implement policies and actions to encourage the use of coal, our most abundant and affordable resource, and protect our nation's coal mining jobs to ensure America's energy security. Signed, Cletus J. Nosefinger. Oh, no, actually, who created this? Well, he just calls himself T.H. from Ona, West Virginia. O-N-A, Ona. Yeah. Can we analyze this for just a moment, please? When he says that American coal companies create 766,000 jobs, understand that he's including anybody who, he's including the person who, in his little old jobs numbers, he's including the guy or woman probably in a sweatshop in Bangladesh who puts the little plastic thingies on the ends of bootlaces, okay, as well as the people who make the boots. And the people who make the jeans and the socks. And, you know, the Hanes people down in Guatemala or Honduras who are making the his underdrawers and his long johns and whatnot. Yeah, them's coal jobs. And the feller down to the Quickie Rippy Mart who slices the bologna for his bologna sandwiches. That's a coal job. because she couldn't do it for nobody but no coal miners' jobs. See, you know this guy is a liar to begin with. And, you know, they used to say, and in fact, you can even hear some folks around here still say, half of America's electricity comes from coal. Only it doesn't. This guy says 40% of the nation's electric generation comes from coal. But it doesn't. It's less than 40%. We're really getting there. Yeah, and see, Jason, who is in Mississippi, Stan, at the moment, points out the fallacy of all this. He says, you know, there are 1,000 union jobs just north of Meridian, Mississippi, because of Obama's war on coal. It's a $3 to $4 billion plant. Well, but see, that's because they triumphed over Obama's war on coal. Because he has insulted. See, it says here in the petition, so it's got to be true. He has denounced coal and has insulted generations of coal miners. Let's see, Dad. Okay, that's you're one generation, Dad. Granddad, that's two generations. Pa Davis, that's three generations. I don't think any of those men would feel insulted. Because they knew their jobs were dirty and dangerous. It's just what they happened to be able to do to keep putting, as Dim Leader once put it, food on their families. Because see, for folks like my dad, granddad, and Pa Davis, my great-grandfather, there just wasn't a hell of a lot of other options there in a mono economy where the workforce was kept as ignorant and fearful as possible. Wait, ignorant, fearful workforce? Wait a minute. Where, what? Yeah. But that one has insulted generations of coal miners. And he done bypassed the Congress with his nefarious socialist Kenyan executive orders. And there's only one problem. If executive orders were that easy to do, don't you reckon we'd have something in the way of a... No, well... You get the idea. Barack Obama, end your war on coal. Now, here are some of the signatures. I mean, they're just initials, but listen to the wheres. Ono, West Virginia, Corbin, Kentucky, Cold Iron, Kentucky, Hoskinston, Kentucky, Morgantown, West Virginia, Sanibel, Florida. Well, somebody got up the retirement money, didn't they? Vico, Kentucky, Beckley, West Virginia, Pilgrim, Kentucky, Yedis, Yeadiss, really, Yedis, Kentucky, Gray's Knob, Kentucky, no dirty jokes, thanks, Cowed, Kentucky, New Martinsville, West Virginia, North Pennsylvania, like Maryland, Mobile, Alabama. Kemper, K-I-M-P-E-R, Kentucky. Stopover, Kentucky. Richlands, Virginia. Wooten, Kentucky. Houstonville, Kentucky. McCarr, Kentucky. Do you see the death grip? And to the extent that these people in Kentucky and West Virginia, Southwest Virginia, and Northeast Tennessee are within the clutches of the coal industry, they're being poisoned and killed even as we speak. See, it's worth remembering that coal miners have the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Coal miners have the various state departments of labor. Coal miners have sometimes, a few of them at least, a union, the UMWA, to look out for them. people who live at the foot of a mountaintop removal operation, people who live downwind of a mountaintop removal operation, people who live downstream of a mountaintop removal operation have no such protections. It is as though they were bound naked to a post and forced to breathe the crap that comes off these sites and to wallow in its water. But even so, people die. And they, when you die in a coal mine, you die horribly. I've heard it said that there's no good death. The night before the Ides of March, it was reported that there was a dinner table conversation at Gaius Caesar's place, the Domus Publica, wherein the dinner table question was, how do you want to go? And Gaius Caesar's answer was, the method doesn't matter as long as it's quick. Well, there are different ways, and some are more horrible than others. This is the result of the report of an investigation by the U.S. Mine Safety and Health Administration, which people like Rand Paul oppose even the existence of. Here's the report summary, courtesy of Ken Ward at the Cold Tattoo blog at the Charleston Gazette. On Saturday, November 17th, 2012, it takes a while to crank these reports out, at approximately 3:25 a.m., Chad Myers, a 30-year-old continuous mining machine operator, and dear God, to see one of these continuous mining machines is like, it looks like something that comes from a really, really bad movie, or a movie about really, really bad things. Right, you get the idea. Just sharp teeth that claw into the stone, into the mine face. You get the idea. Chad Myers, a 30-year-old continuous mining machine operator, was fatally injured while repositioning a continuous mining machine on the number 5 working section. Myers was backing the continuous mining machine out of the first cut of a crosscut being developed to the left of the number 4 entry. As Myers was repositioning the continuous mining machine to mine the right side of the crosscut, he was pinned between the continuous mining machine cutter head and the out-by coal rib. Just let that rattle around for a minute. The administrative controls and policies in place at the time of the accident were not adequate to prevent the practice of operating continuous mining machines from an unsafe location. Wow, when that profit motive gets in the way, human beings get turned into bloody jello. Also, no engineering controls were in place to prevent this type of accident. The accident occurred because the victim operated the machine while he was located between the left side of the cutter head and the coal rib, and he got continuously mined. To prevent, the Mine Safety and Health Administration reports, to prevent this type of fatal accident, mine operators must strictly adhere to the requirements of their approved roof control plans, which includes strictly following policies and procedures that keep miners from entering red zones. Also, proximity detection systems should be installed on all continuous mining machines. We've got these machines, and that's not already there? Proximity detection systems are not exactly super high technology now, are they? Here's what caused the death of Chad Myers. The mine operator did not ensure compliance with the provisions of the approved roof control plan requiring that all persons be in a safe location away from any part of the continuous mining machine when the machine is being repositioned or trammed. The continuous mining machine operator was located in the red zone between the continuous mining machine and the coal rib while the machine was being repositioned. The operator did not enforce its red zone policy. Accident investigators found that red zone violations were a practice. When they say it's a practice, what that means is it wasn't a one-off. It happens all the time. Dear God. You don't want to even contemplate the screaming. Jesus. Just a gentle reminder that this will, that the urge for profit will brutalize anyone and anything if there's enough money in it. Just remember. Just remember. Ah, thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Worthless trivia. Hey, Bob, those little plastic things on the ends of shoelaces are aglets. My head is full of useless crap like that. Someday you're gonna be hell on Jeopardy, though, Ron. Aglets. Now, my head's got that in it. But see, if I'd said aglets, I would have had to answer 19 emails saying, hey, Bob, what do you mean? What's an aglet? Marty, how do I want to go? For me, preferably not at all. I know. So, we've got a pretty good idea. I mean, now the coal that guy was mining, Chad Myers, gone 8 months now. And missed every day by his family. The coal that he was mining, you know, maybe it was going to go to a coal-fired power plant. In T.H. of Ona, West Virginia's dipweed petition, he said, and we have to have coal to make steel. There aren't that many functioning American steel mills anymore. Most of the coal that goes to make steel goes to make it in China and India and, yes, Russia. So we don't know. I mean, this was a Peabody operation, but we don't know where that coal was going to go. But we know that by the time it saw the light of day, it was soaked in human blood. The prices we pay. The prices we pay. On the other hand, I happened to be out before my meeting started today. I happened to be out walkabout. And you know how the bus company, you know, at the bus stops, they'll put up advertising signs? Well, I had to take a picture of this one. Maybe I'll put it up on Twitter later. This was an ad paid for by the government of Canada, i.e. the Harper government. Which I don't. If I understand our Canadian friends well at all, I understand could not be trusted with the corpse of a dead skunk. The Harper government paid to put ads on the bus stop in Washington D.C. on Capitol Hill, and it shows a picture of two children: one, a cute little boy peeking out from behind Canada's famous red and white maple leaf flag, and a cute little girl peeking out from behind the Stars and Stripes. And it says, America and Canada, friends, neighbors, allies, eh? Okay, the A's not there. And then it says, America's best energy partner. Remember when I said the things we'll do for, yeah. America's choice, import oil from Canada, a secure and environmentally responsible neighbor, or choose less stable offshore sources with much weaker environmental standards. Canada delivers 2.4 million barrels of oil to American refineries every day through pipelines connecting Americans to a reliable source of fuel. Canadians, do not get mad at me, please, for my his poor attempt at doing a Canadian accent. and they want you to go to gowithcanada.ca. So, I mean, can we look at that real quick on the radio show? Can we listen to that real quick? Canada, a secure and environmentally responsible neighbor. You can see the tar sands degradation and devastation probably with a decent little piece of optics from another planet. You could probably see the tar sands area of Alberta from the moon. And here's the hint. The minute you see it, you don't think, responsible, environmentally responsible. That's what that is. You know, that's why that whole idle no more movement is going on among native peoples in Canada, because they realize that they're about to get run over again. And they're not up for it. They don't want cards in that game. Or we can choose. Do you know, notice the false dichotomy here? Let's make sure we get this. America's choice, import oil from Canada, a secure and environmentally responsible neighbor, or choose less stable offshore sources with much weaker environmental standards. Yeah, like those offshore wind turbines. Oh, they have weaker environmental standards. I mean, have you ever been around when there was one of those wind spills? The last hurricane, oh my goodness, those blades were just turning, and there was wind spilling all over the place. Oh, sorry, Jason, I'm not trying to. Bob, you're making me feel guilty working at the latest, greatest Mississippi power, clean coal power plant. He says, LOL, it's a lignite coal plant, lignite. You know, and for those of who are keeping score at home, lignite is carboniferous mud. It hasn't baked quite all the way into coal yet. Oh, they'll probably find out a way to burn some mountaintop removal coal in there. I mean, you'd hate to miss the opportunity, right? Less stable offshore sources with much weaker environmental standards. Canada delivers 2.4 million barrels of oil to American refineries every day through pipelines. See, they got the pipelines part in there. Through pipelines connecting Americans to a reliable source of fuel. You might have noted today that there was a speech, an economic speech, by President Not Sure. And he said, you know, he gives a great speech. And he talked about how we've got to quit fooling around, and we got to get serious about our economic problems and yada, 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 yada. That's why America has to make the investments necessary to promote long-term growth and shared prosperity, rebuilding our manufacturing base, educating our workforce, upgrading our transportation and information networks. That's what we need to be talking about. That's what Washington needs to be focused on. Okay. If you can get Steve King of Iowa to stop talking, and I'm not kidding, about how all them illegal aliens has calves like cantaloupes from carrying them 130-pound bales of the marijuana through the desert and up here to America to corrupt the lives of our precious little God-fearing cheerings. If you can get him to stop doing that, long, I don't know, maybe, sure. But it is telling, I think. It is telling that the House of Representatives' answer to Foster Brooks, you know, the orange one, God, he's down to wearing ties that match his face now. Just looking at the picture here. He said that, where is it here? Yeah, there it is. He said that, Boehner said that President Obama should hurry up and approve the construction of the, you know where I'm going, because you just heard the poster that I read from the bus stop on Capitol Hill. Construction of the Keystone Pipeline. Because, you know, that's going to, I mean, we're all going to be up to our necks in Frisbees and wheat checks after that, right? Yeah. You know, I have a feeling we're going to have an even greater need for the Affordable Care Act if the Keystone XL pipeline gets approved. I just have that feeling. Still can't make me talk about it. Nope. Oh, if you ever want to see a really, really frightening photograph, although I must admit the impulse shows at least perhaps a modicum of humanity. Two-year-old son of a Secret Service agent is being treated for leukemia and lost his hair. And George H.W. Bush has shaved his head in solidarity with a little fellow named Patrick. The little fellow reminded them of the daughter that they lost 60 years ago, Robin. That's the one, the little girl, the baby sister of W, who on the day that they buried the poor little child, W was shuffled off to his nanny, while HW and the missus went to play golf. God. Oh, well. I tell you what we're going to do. I am going to reboot this thing. I don't want to do a program with no daggum audio and no daggum Skype. So we're going to reboot and be back. We will go to Glockenspiel music in the interim. You're listening to Conversation Radio on the Horn. As noted, we are in about a $500 deep hole for fundraising right now. And many thanks to Diane for keeping that from being a $550 hole last night. Thank you, Diane. Thank you. Thank you immensely. Thus far this evening, though, no contributions rolling in. It's about 20 minutes past the hour. Break time. Reboot time. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Check. 1, 2. All right, so I've got no playback, no phones. But I got a working microphone, so hopefully that'll get us through for at least, you know, another hour or so, I hope, and we can, well, it ain't conversation radio, but I reckon it's something. Little story breaking out of this little village where I am today. You know, we're broadcasting live from Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Little village indeed. There was a bit of drama, if nothing else. It may have merely been street theater or house theater or whatever. There was legislation taken up by the House of Representatives today. The final tally, 217 to 205. Interesting how that broke. The House of Representatives divided. You remember? A house divided cannot stand. Yeah. Thanks, Abe. A so-called bipartisan coalition came together, Democrats and a few Republicans, led by Representative Amash, to defund the NSA's ability to pay corporate contractors to spy on you and me and possibly tap into such deep and abiding national security concerns as, well, great grandma Edna's recipe for black walnut fudge. The pralines, right? The New York Times reporting, the bipartisan coalition pressing to rein in the NSA vowed that the increasing outrage would overwhelm opposition in the coming months. It was 217 to 205, far closer than expected, and displayed the shifting allegiances and fierce lobbying on both sides. I mean, it was busy over there today. Outside the Senate, you had some folks protesting, demanding the closure of Guantanamo Bay so that people, and also the end of the forced feeding of people that we're trying to keep alive so we can keep them there until they die. Right? A matter of politics making strange bedfellows? All one gets out of this story at the New York Times that it was 217 to 205. If anybody wants to do the homework, it would be fascinating to see on the fly. And you can reach me at bobkincaid@gmail.com if you can find the breakdown. Find out how that fell. Those who stood up against the rather silly machinations of a corporate-driven, and I want to get, let's deal with this for a minute, a corporate-driven urge to collect data and an urge to what? Maintain something resembling privacy, if it isn't actually privacy. A majority of Democrats, 111, voted for Amash's amendment, according to our buddy Isaac. Despite Obama's pressure, 83 Democrats voted no. GOP, 94 to 134. Telling, huh? And if you ever wanted to hear, and I think I've actually got this saved from a couple of days ago, because when I read it, I thought, man, didn't even pass Marketing 101. Uh, All right, where is it? Well, darn. Who was it? Former head of the NSA, made some of no relation to anything that you or I would recognize as reality. But, you know, there was a guy who used to wear a uniform who now work. I think he works for it. It wasn't Mullen, but he works for the Chertoff Group, and it was. Oh, for heaven's sake. Let me see if I can just find this, because it made me crazy. Man, this keyboard's loud. Oh, there it is, I think. Yeah, it goes back to July the 20th. Yeah, it's Michael Hayden. Yeah, there he is. Michael Hayden gave an interview to the Australian Financial Review Friday past. And he said, "The issue is, at what point does Islamic fundamentalism flip over and become a genuine national security threat? Likewise, at what point does a cultural tendency toward transparency flip over to become a deep threat inside your system? They are similar issues." To which I replied, remembering the frustrated tone of my mother's voice many years ago, "Oh, for pity's sakes!" My mother would not have said poop if she had had a... Well, right. Let's see. This one quote will drive you nuts. Here it is. I love being talked down to. It's quite fascinating. But here's Michael Hayden talking about our security state. The appropriate balance between liberty and security. What did Ben Franklin say? Those who would trade some liberty for some security deserve neither? Yeah. The appropriate balance between liberty and security has bedeviled free peoples, including Americans, for centuries. But it takes a special kind of arrogance to believe that the moral judgment of one person on the dilemma suddenly trumps that of two incredibly different presidents, both houses of Congress. He's not convincing. None of these people are. It is, it's pathetic. And today we actually had a vote on it. And as Isaac points out, it broke largely along party lines. And rather disgustingly so. I'm still hoping eventually to... Yeah, there it is. Okay, thanks, Isaac. Final roll call results. Roll call 412. A 94 ayes, 134 noes among Republicans, 111 ayes, 83 noes among Democrats. Let's see, the ayes. Let's check the no's first, just for fun. No. Wasserman Schultz, no. Chris Van Hollen, no. No. Oh, dear me, there's some disturbing no's on here. Okay, let's go up and get inspired. Let's see some eyes. Caps, Capuano, Cardenas, Carson, Cartwright, Chu, Ciccolini, Clark, Clay, Cleaver, Clyburn, Cohen, Connolly, Conyers, Courtney, Crowley, Cummings, DeFazio, DeJet, DeLauro, Dingle, Doggett, Eshoo, Ellison, Edwards, Farr, Fata, Fudge, Gabbard, Garamendi, O'Rourke, Nolan, Neal, Napolitano, Nadler, Moran, Moore, George Miller, Michaud, McDermott, Jim McDermott of Washington, Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, Doris Matsui, John Lewis. Not surprised that he would stand up for something like American privacy. Raul Grijalva, actually passed Congressman Grijalva walking on the street today. I didn't say anything to him. He looked rather busy. Alan Grayson, Gene Green of Texas got it right. Shelley Pingree of Maine got it right. Jared Polis got it right. Good God, even my congressman, Nick Rahal, got this one right. Charlie Rangel got it right. Rush Holt of New Jersey got it right. My goodness gracious. AIC Act sponsor, John Yarmuth, got it right. Peter Welch of Vermont, got it right. Nikki Tsongas of Massachusetts, the first member of the Massachusetts delegation to sign onto the AIC Act, got it right. Let's see, from the Got It Wrong department, Nancy Pelosi. Meng Lipinski. Oh, goodness. Jude will be unhappy. Her congressman, Mr. Kilmer, got it wrong. But it is an interesting breakout, 217 to 205. That does not bode well. Hopefully the Obama administration will learn a little bit from that, because there's a lot of learning possible there. Oh, mercy. I just got a text in, a photograph from my youngest daughter of some young human being wearing a black T-shirt that says Cole in white letters. And, ew, just ew. Now, this is, it's a fascinating little breakout. Not voting on the Republican side, 6. Not voting on the Democratic side, 6. But for people who are concerned about privacy, there's your numbers. That tells you everything you want to know. 111 Democrats said they wanted to speak up for the Fourth Amendment rights of the American people. Only 94 Republicans did. Well over half of the Democratic caucus spoke out for Fourth Amendment rights. Way less than half of the Republican caucus did. Now, granted, it was a Republican, Representative Amash, who led this. He did so, it's a procedural wrangle, an amendment to the appropriations bill. One wonders if it'll come up again. There's really no way of knowing. Thanks, Isaac, for digging that up. I really, really appreciate that. So that's, well, at least a little breaking news as we wrap up the evening. I'm going to wrap it up here. I'm trying to get a show out every evening. It's just to sit here and filibobster at you for 3 hours. It kind of runs contrary to everything we say that this whole enterprise is supposed to be about. Kind of frustrating. So let's try this again tomorrow night, and hopefully it'll work a little bit better. Until then, thank you very kindly. I sure do understand why fundraising has fallen off. Oh, no, wait. Before we go, one last little thing. One last little thing before we knock off for the evening, if you don't mind. And I hope you don't. A news story out of Russia. And I'm sure that the Taliban equivalent Americans, you know, the tea people, will find this to their liking. I'm sure that this will be a big deal with the American Family Association of Tublo Mazepi. Oh, by the way, the AFA have got, you know where the latest Jesus hustle is? Yeah, the American Family Association of Tublo Mazepi have gone into the coffee business. You know, because them Starbucks they sell you that Homer sectional gay Marian coffee. You know, one sip of a half calf latte macchiato with extra soy milk foam, and you'll just be throwing a boa around your neck, and you'll hang a disco ball in your nearest church, and well, everything will just go to hell. Right? No, they're in the coffee business. And some of it, Fritz in Arkansas sent this story along. Oh, my God. The American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, who are going into the coffee-making business. Well, they are making sure they're using some of that Ugandan coffee. You know, because there in Uganda, they have traditional family values, and that's how come they want to execute the Homer sectionals. Can you imagine? Really, I'm not kidding. You can apparently get coffee from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. I don't know if they've got storefronts, or maybe you're just supposed to order it online. I don't really care. No. For all I know, they're probably selling that monkey poo coffee, and I don't want none of that. There really is monkey poo coffee. You know that, don't you? Yeah, sure. But they specifically... make sure that they're selling some Ugandan coffee, because Ugandan Christians are being persecuted for their love of the Lord. How are they being persecuted? Because there's a lot of people in the world that don't want to let Uganda slaughter people for how they love each other. Some persecution. Meanwhile, back in Russia, as I mentioned, a new legislative revision aims to protect the views. What? See, I don't think it works that way. because, you see, in Russia, you can't insult the views and you can't make people feel bad for believing in their invisible sky friend. You can't say things like, really? Can you prove him? No? And they go, my feelings are hurt. And the next thing you know, you're pussy rioting and you're in the Lubyanka and, well, goodbye. That's how that works. Yeah, it's been in the Russian civil code for a while. The protection of religious believers' free feelings. But see, instead of recognizing that that's really stupid, well, there's been a revision to the Russian criminal code that says that it's also illegal to insult the feelings of atheists, the religious feelings. You got that? Insult the feelings of religious believers, even if they're atheists who aren't, by definition, members of a religion. The law will now protect the feelings of adherents of non-traditional religions and atheists as well. So, that's going to everybody just shuts up and nobody, but even silence can, right? Oh, God. Well, this is, yeah, welcome to Russia. No, I mean, I'm not directing that toward anybody. Just saying. All right. By the way, just since we talked a little bit of coal a little bit ago, a little something from Scientific American. I like Scientific American sometimes. Agnes sent this along. Rather a fascinating observation. You got to go back 3.6 million years ago to find an ice-free Arctic. I think we've talked about this. Lake Baikal, Siberia. I think Dr. John brought it up. Summer temperatures during the mid-Pliocene were around 60 degrees Fahrenheit. 3.6 million years ago. And carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere were about 380 to 450 parts per million. Isn't science cool? We're getting near 400 now, thanks. 60 degrees Fahrenheit in the summer in the Arctic, no ice. Oh, I'm sorry, it wasn't Lake Baikal. It was Lake Elgig. Now that just looks like a Family Guy joke. Lake Elgiggity Giggity. Lake Elgigigtigin. Meanwhile, here in D.C., people are still walking around talking about last week was just awful. They use words like unbearable. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get more so, right? And I'm proud of myself. I made it through almost 2 hours of radio without mentioning that topic that drives our buddy Jan in the UK, just made her run away the other night. we were in meetings pretty much all day yesterday, but every now and then we'd get around a TV set. And there were only two stories being covered. That was it. Two stories, both equally stupid, vapid, vacuous, meaningless. Meanwhile, in the real world of politics and, you know, crime and stuff, well, goodness me. Looky there. The governor of the Old Dominion, Bob McDonnell, who is a fundamentalist, so we can talk about him on prayer meeting Wednesday. Well, he announced it, and the funny thing is, it wasn't just Fox. Fox was covering only two stories. MSNBC was covering only two stories. CNN, only two stories. And the third story, the story they weren't covering, was fascinating. The governor of Virginia announced that he paid back about $120,000 in loans, read bribes, and apologized sincerely for the embarrassment he brought on to the Commonwealth of the Old Dominion. Now this guy there was a Rolex, I think. There was a $15,000 catering bill for Bob McDonald's precious Lumpkin's wedding. Oh, it went on and on and on. $120,000 worth of on and on and on. $18,000 worth of gifts went to Ken Cuccinelli, really, Cuccinelli, a guy who's fascinated with lady parts, and makes McDonald look positively mainstream. Yeah, he was in on the scam too. Now the loans got paid back. The gifts, now there was no mention of the gifts. I mean, really, why would you give back a used Rolex? I mean, it's used now. It's been worn. It's got little DNA hair particles in it. I mean, nobody would ever want that, right? Now, what did the guy who gave the money is a tobacco magnate by the name of Johnny R. Williams Sr. And he's also McDonald also took gifts from Star Scientific. But Williams, $15,000 to cover the daughter's 2011 wedding catering bill, yada yada yada. And you know, because you know there were no, you know, it's not like there were deals being made or anything. But you know, if he's in there, Governor, I just want to let you know that. I realize you don't get paid a whole lot here being governor of the Old Dominion, and the Commonwealth just don't pay you a whole lot. And you know, I think the world of your daughter, and I know you was gonna just have them little old sea monkey shrimp, little tiny sea monkey shrimp at the reception. I just can't tell, because I think she's a fine young woman. I want the couple to have a happy start. So why don't you let me cater that? Would you please? It would be my honor. Well, golly gee, Johnny, sure. Oh, that's so nice. Hey, honey, we don't have to have the little sea monkey shrimp. We're going to get the really big ones. Yeah, and they're not even toxic. You know, like from the Gulf or anything. They're not toxic. No, that'd be yummy. Yeah. Well, that's just so nice of you, Johnny. Oh, it ain't no problem. Ain't no problem at all. You know, I was thinking while I was up here, I was going to go over and pay a little old visit to, the health secretary for the Old Dominion. You know, I got this pain in my bilbo, and I got a bone in my leg. I thought the secretary could maybe help me find a good doctor for it. Now, see, Johnny R. Williams was a tobacco executive, but he also loves him some vitamins. Nutritional supplements, they're called. And it just so happened that when Johnny R. Williams, and the governor, well, wait just a minute. I mean, I wouldn't want you walking on that bum leg of yours. Oh, no, your knee, you got a bone in your leg, dang it. Let me call the secretary and just get the secretary over here for you. I bet y'all have a lovely conversation. And they did. They had a conversation all about Johnny Williams's little vitamin nutritional supplement hustle. God. And we heard nothing about it. It's a fascinating story. But we didn't get to hear diddly about it. Because the for-profit media were all eat up in telling us stories that I will not even mention. Oh, see, this just pisses me off that I can't play any audio right now. Just chaps my buns. Because we got... oh, we got some first-class Louie here. This happened today in a committee hearing of the House Judiciary Committee. No one lives forever, and you don't want to waste any Louie. It's a sin to be wasteful. This is Louis Gohmert, the man who accused the Attorney General of the United States of casting aspersions on his asparagus. This is Louis who is too, you can't even keep up anymore. Who expressed the outrage of frustrated non-crab eating Americans all over the country. Yeah, I agree. The angry Indian asking me via Skype, where's Buford Pusser when you really need him, talking about that Bob McDonald story. But it was Louis Gohmert who spoke up for all the Americans who can't eat king crab legs because all them welfare people's eating them first with their food stamps. Well, now this. Audio. Sweet Jesus, hang on. Oh, I'm so excited.
Chair, thanks, gentlemen. Four-person gentleman from Texas, seek recognition.
Rise in opposition to the amendment.
Gentleman's recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's nobody in...
Now, hold on. Opposition to the amendment. This isn't the NSA spying amendment. It was a bill by the House Judiciary Committee, in the House Judiciary Committee, that would prevent the government from engaging in regulatory decrees. Among other things, regulatory decrees for civil rights violations. The summary of H.R. 1493 reads as follows. Sunshine for Regulatory Decrees and Settlements Act of 2013 defines a covered civil action as a civil action seeking to compel agency action and alleging that an agency is unlawfully withholding or unreasonably delaying an agency action relating to a regulatory action that would affect the rights of private persons other than the person bringing the action or a state, local, or tribal government. Defines covered consent decree or covered settlement agreement as a consent decree or settlement agreement entered into a covered civil and other consent decree, yada, yada, yada. requires an agency seeking to enter a covered consent decree or settlement agreement to publish such decree or agreement in the Federal Register and online not later than blah, 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 blah. Okay. See, a consent decree is a thing that the government uses to settle a lawsuit when the person, when the grassroots organization that's brought the lawsuit is clearly in the right. Because there's no sense in taking cases to trial where the outcome is foregone. So the government enters into a consent decree, and the consent decree says it declares what the parties will do as a result of the violation of law. Now, enter Steve Cohen, co-sponsor, by the way, of the AIC Act, and darn good human being, a Tennessee Democrat. Steve Cohen offered an amendment to the bill that said third parties couldn't intervene in a regulatory action that prevents or is intended to prevent discrimination on the basis of race, sex, national origin, or other protected characteristic. You know, civil rights laws. Representative John Conyers advanced Representative Cohen's position, and that the same protects minority communities from things like police brutality. Enter Gohmert.
Chair, thanks, gentlemen. For purposes, the gentleman from Texas, seek recognition.
Rise in opposition to the amendment.
Gentleman's recognized for 5 minutes.
So, Louis opposes the amendment by Representative Cohen, that is supported by Representative Conyers, that would keep third parties from interfering in consent decrees relating to. Okay, so we've got all that, right? We're square. Good. Strap in. I hope you didn't get the tennis ball all slobbery earlier. You're going to need it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's nobody in this chamber that is more appreciative than I am for the gentleman from Tennessee and my friend from Michigan.
Oh, brother, here's the sandbagging. I want to offer a moment of praise because Alabama Republican Spencer Baucus joined with the Democrats in voting for the amendment. I'll go ahead and ruin the drama for you. The amendment failed. The amendment failed on this bill. It was 13-16. The bill itself with all its publication requirements and notice requirements and, the general attempt to prevent consent decrees from being, put into effect, that passed out of committee. Fortunately, no matter how much frustration we tend to periodically announced with the Senate, fortunately, this thing will not get past the Senate. It didn't get past the Senate the last time. This is a stated desire of the Republican majority in the House of Representatives to try to get people who have been aggrieved by various and sundry government actions to quit being so damned uppity. Back to Louie.
Standing up for the right.
Wait a minute. Okay.
Thanks, gentlemen. For purposes, the gentleman from Texas seek recognition.
Rise in opposition to the amendment.
Gentleman's recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's nobody in this chamber that is more appreciative than I am for the gentleman from Tennessee and my friend from Michigan standing up for the rights of race, religion, national origin, of the Delta Smelt, the Snail Daughter.
Huh? What? Now remember, this guy, Louis Gohmert, sat on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. This guy, they gave this guy for a little while a black robe and people had to call him Your Honor. Now, I don't know with him being, I don't know how you don't call him your ignorance. At 18 seconds into this soundbite, Louis Gohmert went straight down the rabbit hole into Lewis Carroll land. Once he gets past I Rise in Opposition, the rest of it turns into "'Twas brillig when the slithy toad did gyre and gibble in the wave, all mimsy were the morgue." Did you hear what he said? Of course you did. Let's try again.
Chair, thanks, gentlemen. Four-person gentleman from Texas, seek recognition.
Rise in opposition to the amendment.
Gentleman's recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's nobody in this chamber that is more appreciative than I am for the gentleman from Tennessee.
Now, we understand that this is about civil rights. Things like police brutality. The remarks that were made by Steve Cohen of Tennessee, by John Conyers of Michigan, made it abundantly clear the purpose of the amendment. And may I remind you that this is the House Judiciary Committee, where sober, serious deliberations are supposed to take place regarding the nature of our judicial system and the way that our laws are enacted and enforced and executed. Not that kind of execution.
See, and my friend from Michigan standing up for the rights of race, religion, national origin of the Delta.
National origin? I think he's been into the asparagus a little early today, don't you?
For the rights of race, religion, national origin of the Delta smelt, the snailed order, various lizards, the lesser prairie chicken, the greater sage grouse, and so many other insects who would want someone standing for their religion, their race, their national origin. And I think that's wonderful.
You got that? An amendment that would have spoken directly to protecting the rights of minority human beings not to be beaten and to be able to have real and meaningful redress, such as, you know, when it turns out that your entire police department is a racist gang of thugs that likes to go and wail the hell out of people just because of the color of their skin. Well, you enter a consent decree, and it promises that the government will take the police department, overseen maybe by the Justice Department, will take certain actions to make sure that they end that practice of hatefulness. Louis Gohmert just said that people who have been beaten and entered into consent decrees with police departments are no better than various lizards, the lesser prairie chicken, the Delta smelt, the snail darter, the greater sage grout, and other insects. On the other hand, we have representing Steve King. Representing Steve King, sweet Jesus, who has his own opinion of undocumented immigrants. He doesn't think there's really that many immigrants in America who really came here of no action of their own, you know, little children who happened to be raised by their loving parents who had come to America to find a job, and children who can't go to college, can't get a job, and never intended, had anything to do in, right. He doesn't think those people exist, but he knows who does.
And, you know, there doesn't mean that there aren't groups of people in this country that, you know, that I have sympathy for. I do. And there are kids that were brought into this country by their parents unknowing that they were breaking the law. And they will say to me and others who defend the rule of law, we have to do something about the 11 million. And some of them are valedictorians. Well, my answer to that is, and then, by the way, their parents brought them in. It wasn't their fault. It's true in some cases, but they aren't all valedictorians. They weren't all brought in by their parents. For everyone who's a valedictorian, there's another 100 out there that they weigh 130 pounds and they've got calves the size of cantaloupes because they're hauling 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert. Those people would be legalized with the same act. And until the folks that want to open the borders and grant this amnesty can define the difference between the innocent ones who have deep ties with America and those who have been, I'll say, undermining our culture and civilization and profiting from criminal acts, until they can define that difference, they should not advocate for amnesty for both good and evil.
And thanks to our dear friends at Right Wing Watch for capturing that audio. So to recap, Steve King thinks the marijuana that Bill O'Reilly is complaining about black folks smoking is being carried across the desert in 75-pound bales by 130-pound Mexicans with calves like cantaloupes. Because, well, marijuana under... Did you catch that? It's 2013. The cannabis discussion is pretty much over at this point. It's just a matter of getting the laws right. Just as with the marriage equality debate is pretty much over in this country. It's just a matter of getting the laws right. And, you know, these steps are being taken. We had one of those today. Pennsylvania, I think. Yeah, it's in Pennsylvania. Some city or county official began issuing marriage licenses to gay couples just because the lawyer that advised the county said, look, you know, Pennsylvania, you know, Pennsylvania has a DOMA statute that's probably pretty well unconstitutional, so why don't you just let folks get married? Which the recorder or the clerk or the said, you know, that's a great idea. And issue, and really, it's a big damn deal. Issued a marriage license to a couple of women who wanted to get hitched. It's just a matter of getting the laws right. Reefer Madness King here is convinced that marijuana undermines our society. And in particular is undermined by 130-pound Mexicans with calves like cantaloupes carrying 75-pound bales of you know, peppery-smelling Mexican seedy stuff. This dumb bastard, does he not realize? I mean, there's a lot of products in which the United States has a net import-export deficit, where we import more than we export. Note to Steve, cannabis ain't one of them. We have some of the most prolific, some of the most inspired, some of the most creative breeders of cannabis in the world. And you don't, and it doesn't have to, you know, it's not like Shel Silverstein's Great Smoke Off, where, yeah, there were hemp smokers and some of that wet imported shit that capsized off Key West, right? You know, you remember that. Bangkok's blooming best. And some of that Manhattan silver that grows down in the New York sewers. No. Ask anybody. Northern California, Oregon, Washington, hell, Kentucky, West Virginia. If the stuff was absolutely legalized, corn, soybeans, and tobacco would be blown past by cannabis as the number one cash crop in places like Kentucky and West Virginia and Indiana. And of course. Just about getting the laws right. Calves like cantaloupes. Yeah, you know, those flies have been, you know, they got tsetse flies down there the size of eagles. Jesus. But back to life with Louis. Oh, I hope this still works. You remember Louis, who thinks that people who enter into consent decrees because they've had the living be Jesus beaten out of them by the cops are no better than insects, because, you know, he said that.
And I'm grateful to my friend from Michigan for bringing up the Voting Rights Act as well, because, as he will recall, when we were taking up the extension of the Voting Rights Act, I pointed out then that you... No, I won't. I pointed out then that the Voting Rights Act was continuing to punish present generations for the sins of generations 40 and 50 years ago.
Yeah, because, see, I ain't never owned no slave. It's that argument again. Oh, my God.
That now had less racial disparity than the numbers across the country, and that there were new areas where sins had arisen that were not being brought under the punitive provision. And I promised my friend, if we would extend that to those areas where there was racial disparity that showed racial discrimination, I would agree. And because there was basically a consent decree between some people on both sides of the aisle, we were overrun, and it took the Supreme Court to point out, you can't keep punishing present generations for sins of generations 50 years ago.
Yeah, that, see, that's what that is. We've, now, wait a minute. We've gone from Delta smelts, snail darters, the lesser prairie chicken, and insects, other insects. By the way, did you notice that, there's the list. The Delta smelt and the snail darter, they're both fish. Various lizards, those are lizards. The lesser prairie chicken, well, it's a prairie chicken and probably not lesser to its mama. The greater sage grouse, so many other insects. This goddamn idiot probably thinks a stalk of asparagus is a freaking whale. But that's what it is. If we continue to let people vote that Louis doesn't like, that is punishing present generations for past sins. You cannot assail logic like that. You can't.
Now, we're talking about the Fish and Wildlife lawsuits. And I know that the way it's been going, you've had liberal people in the Fish and Wildlife who wanted more land, more...
Liberal? Liberal? You've had liberal people in the Fish and Wildlife Department? Division? Administration? No, you've got liberal Fish and Wildlife. Well, you knew it would happen sooner or later. We lost Louis. But that's okay, because we got what we needed of him. Gracious. Congratulations, human beings, human American beings. Congratulations. Louis Gohmert, defender of family values, says that you're no better than a lesser prairie chicken. You don't even qualify to be compared with a greater prairie chicken, just the lesser one. And the snail darter. Oh, for heaven's sakes. It really does. It becomes taxing, challenging. He tasks me. Louis Gohmert tasks me. So we draw near the end of the evening's program. And I thank you for the kind indulgence of your time that it's taken me to get this thing sorted out. And by the way, I am working with the fine folks at the manufacturer of this device. They're telling me it's a problem with the computer. The only problem is I've run it on 3 or 4 different computers, and they all have the same problem, and they're different computers and different operating systems and different hardware even. Oh, well. The only thing I haven't run it on is an Apple, so you know, more's the pity for me. And just to give you a bit of an update, Bo and I are here, and we are continuing to work on the Yank Act. and we are definitely running downhill toward Friday. I'll be heading home over the weekend. We've got loads of meetings scheduled both tomorrow and Friday. Again, my plan is to be on the air to the extent that this device will allow me on the air, but one never knows, depending on how late in the afternoon meetings continue. I'll advise by Facebook and by Twitter as best I can. And I'm looking forward to getting home and getting the conversation going again. I miss you guys a lot. So thank you very much for your time this evening. Thank you for your ongoing support. When we meet again, I presume, tomorrow evening, we will be in a $650 hole. Just trying to keep up with, and when I get back, there's going to be tons of bills to pay. They're due now. What happens in 1 month affects the next month's ability to for there to continue being a radio show. So thanks. Thanks immensely. And hopefully we'll get together tomorrow evening. Y'all be well. Take care. Bye now.